This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Got some show news coming up here shortly, but we'll finish up the calls with those of you that have stayed on hold, 301-230-0980. If Ovechkin's the greatest team sport player ever, last half century or so, team sport player, not coach, not GM, you know, we're not including Gibbs or Coach Thompson or Gary Williams or Lefty Driesell or Bobby Bethard or anybody like that. Who's the greatest legend? The difference being one is all about the kind of player and the accomplishments, and the other is all about sort of the famousness of that person. By the way, that person isn't just famous. He was a hell of a player too. For me, legend is Riggo. Greatest player ever, Ovechkin. I don't think that's debatable at this point. Let's go to Joe in Springfield. Joe, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Good, Joe.
So I would agree with you that the greatest player would definitely be Ovechkin. I mean, 20th season, 895 goals. And let's face it, Kevin, if he hadn't hurt his leg like back in December after 5 weeks, the record would be long broken by now. I mean, the way he was going. I mean, it's obvious. So I would say, but legend in this town, there's a couple. You got John Riggins, definitely for that playoff run he had in the 82 season. Darryl Green for 20 years, and I would put Art Monk there too. Remember, Kevin, when in 1992...
If we're talking about just legend, I'd throw Doug Williams in there too.
Doug Williams too, yeah, absolutely. But then, Kevin, I would say one player, and I understand we're just talking about D.C. here, but if you want to talk about for the last quarter of a century, because you know it's been 25 years, I understand where this is D.C., we're not talking about DMV, but why not throw Michael Phelps in there too, Kevin? I mean, all the gold medals that he won.
We were focused on team sport. Athletes. I mean, I'd throw Sugar Ray Leonard and Katie Ledecky in there before Phelps because they're DMVers and Phelps is a Baltimore guy. But but the focus was more on team sport. But you're right. Like, I mean, in terms of the legend in their respective sports, Sugar Ray is an all-time boxing legend. Katie Ledecky is an all-time Olympic legend, swimming legend, and they're both from here.
Exactly.
Yep.
I got you.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Let's go to Little. Little, go ahead.
Man, Kim, come a shout out to Double D. Kim, I think you better. I think the better argument might be your Mount Rushmore. Man, you got. I love Riggins, man, but Riggins wasn't drafted by this organization. We got to go with Darryl Green as a legend, man. 20 years drafted by the organization. Riggins come from the Jets, man, and I love the ground Riggins run the ball on. Because I watched him when he first come here. I told you I worked over the stadium in the early 70s, Kevin. I seen him run the ball. But, man, Darryl Green was drafted by this organization. I think we ought to come up with an argument on the Mount Rushmore, and then you put Riggins on that Mount Rushmore with Doug Williams, Darryl Green, and Joe Theismann. That's all I got, man.
All right. Thanks, Little. Appreciate it. Riggo played much more in Washington than he did with the Jets. Came to D.C. in the 76 season after 5 years in New York and ultimately with a season that he took off in 1980, played 9 years in Washington and obviously was, you know, had a true legendary career. You know, it's funny because I obviously had a chance to work with Riggo for a few years and get to know him a little bit. He loved his years in New York. He loved New York. He loved being a part of the Jets with Joe Namath. Some of his greatest memories as a football player our New York memories. I remember talking to him about that all the time, that, you know, that it's not that it made anybody in D.C. jealous, but I think it was always surprising. But he was among, you know, he was in New York at a time in which Joe Namath wasn't just the biggest star in the NFL. You could argue that Joe Namath was one of the top two or three sports stars, period, in all of sports. And it was a show. He was great in New York, too. But obviously, his legend was made in Washington. And it's also important to say that it wasn't just, you know, the 82 run. That's obviously all-time legendary stuff. But Riggins in 79 was one of the best backs in football and had a legendary game in one of the greatest NFL games ever played, the game in which the Cowboys beat Washington 35-34 in the season finale to knock Washington out of the postseason. Riggins went for 166 yards. He had a 66-yard run that day. Let's see. Am I right that it was 166 yards? He had a 151 yards rushing that day, but it had a 66-yard touchdown run to give Washington at the time what appeared to be an insurmountable lead in the fourth quarter, 34-21. They couldn't go for two back then to extend the lead to 14, and obviously they ended up losing by a point. But Riggins was great in 79. He was outstanding in 81 as Gibbs turned away from, you know, the throw-first San Diego offense. 82 dominant, unbelievable. 83 set the NFL record for rushing TDs in 83 with 24 rushing touchdowns. Was really good in 1984 as well, and then, you know, started to wear down at 36 years old. Billy, finish it up for us. Go ahead.
Kevin, I would say it's important, too, to remind fans that John Riggins wore a mohawk haircut back there at the Jets time. If you ever have the opportunity to go on Google or something and look at one of those haircuts.
Yep.
Legendary.
Well, there's a lot about Riggo that's legendary, including, you know, loosen up Sandy Baby. You know, everybody's got a Riggo story. If you're of a certain age and you are at least out and about occasionally, socially, on the weekends, everybody's got a Riggo story.
That's what makes him a legend in this town.
Yeah.
I'm bored, I'm broken, I'm back.
Yep.
Well, the Ovi story is a nice story, but, I mean, he's also, you know, 1,240 points behind Gretzky. So, I mean, it's a nice story, Kevin, but to call him a town legend, I mean, do you have to be a legend in your sport?
He is a legend, in the sport, Billy. He just set the all-time goal mark.
He's a I'd call him a quasi-legend. He needs another couple cups, to be honest.
No, when you end up in a sport where goals are how you keep score, and he has more than anybody else, he's a legend in that sport. He's a legend in this town. In my opinion, not sure. The legend that Riggins is, but the all-time player for sure is Ovechkin.
It's just, I just when I look at Gretzky, I mean, the points...
We're not comparing him to Gretzky. We're talking about a local conversation.
Well, listen, I mean, that's my opinion on it.
I know, but you're changing the context of it. We're not comparing him to hockey legends. We're comparing him to legends in D.C. sports history.
Like I said, it's a nice story. The team player was Darryl Green in this town.
Darryl Green didn't win one MVP or even one defensive player of the year. Darryl Green's a legend, no doubt. And on, you know, the short list of the greatest team sport players ever, his accomplishments pale in comparison to Ovechkin's.
How about NFL's fastest man four times?
Okay.
That's not legendary?
That, you know what? That would be more about the legendary part of the conversation.
All right. Well, listen, I enjoy the conversation. I just want to share my insights. I mean, Gretzky weighed 140 pounds when he played in the NHL.
Was he 140?
Ovi's a freight train bolted to a Mack truck.
Again,
three years.
Can you stick to the script?
3 years from now, this I can't. The segment I really can't wait for, Kevin. 3 years from now, when we do greatest legend in not only D.C. but the entire country, and Jaden Daniels will be at top of that list. Okay, pal. That's what I'm looking for.
All right, friend. All right, champ. All right, enough of Billy. All right, we've got some news that we will share with you about the show when we come. Oh, wait, Neil wants to weigh in. Let's let Neil weigh in quickly.
Hey, Kevin, and I'm surprised that you didn't mention this one, because when you think of legend, I mean, it's greatness, but in some ways to be a legend, there can also be some tragedy. And Lenny Bias is a legend. I mean, it's all the what ifs. I mean, he was greatness, and then it ended. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, a true definition of a legend, because we still talk about him, you know, he's still known for a lot of things.
Like Sean.
It's the great.
Like Sean.
What if? But even, I think even more than Sean. I mean, I think he was truly about to break out, and we had watched him for 4 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's taken away, and he rises to the level of legend in this area.
Yeah, you know, I didn't include college players, and if I were to do that, Patrick Ewing would have to be a part of the conversation as well, don't you think?
I think for legend,
yes.
Though, I think biased. I think his unfortunate, untimely death just because he's the what he could have been Jordan. He could have been bigger than Jordan in a day when the NBA was like made for him. I mean, the superstar he would have been is clear. He would have been the equivalent of someone like Jordan.
You know, in talking about this and in referencing John a lot, Riggins, Riggo used to think of other players. He wasn't a big sports fan. You know, he and Cooley were very similar that way. They're not big sports fans. They don't sit there and consume a lot of sports. They're into a lot of other things. They played it. They don't watch a lot of it. But Riggo was never impressed with much. But he would always refer to certain athletes that had horsepower. Like Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson had horsepower. Like, and Riggo was a horsepower athlete. I mean, Riggo, people don't remember. Riggo had great speed. You know, he was held the record in the state of Kansas for the 100-yard dash for forever. Maybe still. I don't know. But anyway, in talking about Bias and Sean Taylor, those are two athletes that had horsepower. I mean, those are two tremendous specimens, athletes. Leonard was 6'8 and chiseled. Sean was 6'3, 235, and could run and cover more ground than any player in the league, and then blow you up when he got there. So, you know, the greatest what-ifs, and I think we've done that segment before, and certainly Sean and Bias are always a part of that conversation. And Jordan Reed is always a part of that conversation for different reasons. But both of those guys had unbelievable horsepower. All right, Denton and I have some news about this show. We'll share it with you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. If you want to replace your old drafty windows with energy-efficient windows, call Window Nation. Go to 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. You will end up working with a company that has a great product. They've got the top quality insulation and sealed windows, some of the best insulated windows you can buy. It is a company that provides the greatest service. 96% of their customers are satisfied. They've got over 20,000 five-star reviews. And right now, you're not going to get a better deal from anybody. Four free windows with every four you buy with no money down, no payments, and no interest for two full years. If you buy a house full of windows, Window Nation will give you a free entry door. Again, four free windows with every four you buy without paying anything until the year 2020. 27. Their windows come with a lifetime warranty, so there's no risk at all. This sale ends soon. Don't overpay for expensive windows that may not be as good. Schedule a fast, free in-home estimate now with the pros at Window Nation. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Dallin Cuff from ESPN will jump on with us in about 10 minutes or so to talk about the national championship game last night. But we do have some news to share with you. And it's bittersweet news for me. Denton is taking a new job, and because he's getting married on Friday, today's his last day as the producer of this show. And I'll let Denton tell you more about the job that he's taking in detail in a moment. But, you know, let me just say to you, Denton, and to everybody out there, Denton is talented. He's going to something that'll give him a much better opportunity in so many ways. Compensation, benefits, to, you know, a chance to do his thing as an on-air talent in a bigger way. And I'm thrilled for him. I really am, and encouraged him to really go after this. And he's going to really do well. I am confident in that. At the same time, for me, I'm really going to miss Denton. He's at the top of the list of the best producers I have ever had. He's been also terrific on air with me. And I've said this to him before and to others, you know, that we work for. He's just somebody who gets it. You know, a lot of you understand when I say, and when people say about somebody, yeah, they just get it. Denton just gets it. You know, he's someone who wasn't, you know, ever here just for the paycheck. You know, he was here to do a great job and to make things better. You know, there was no job description necessary for Denton. He just, you know, went well beyond it, you know, consistently. He's smart. He's intuitive. He's so easy to work with. He's easy to communicate with. I've had a lot of producers over the years, and the reason for that is because this is a position that typically is a stepping stone to something else. You know, most producers, some, but most aren't here just to be a producer forever. So I'll let Denton tell you more about the gig, but he knows how I feel about him, and I wish him the best of luck. You were awesome to work with for all of these years. It doesn't even seem like that. it's flown by. And, of course, I wish you were staying on because it makes my life so much easier. But you know how happy I am for you and the opportunity.
So I appreciate those words. I do think it's important to make sure that people are aware that you were very much involved in the process of this. This is not like we are breaking up and over like a beef or anything like that. That was one of my biggest fears, that someone's going to walk away from this and think that we hate each other. We obviously do not. But yeah, so I'm excited about this opportunity. It came together rather quickly, but I will be leaving and starting as the executive producer of The Daily Tip on the BetMGM network with Michael Jenkins and Chelsea Messenger on April 22nd. As you mentioned, today was going to be my last day this week anyway, because I got to go get married this weekend, and then I'm going
to
be...
Well, you don't have to go get married. You've chosen to do
I've chosen to go get married.
Yeah.
And then I'm choosing to go to St. Lucia. So nobody need me next week, because you will not have me. I will be chilling on a beach, drinking lots of liquor with a beautiful wife. So there's a lot like I want to say about this. I'm incredibly excited about this new opportunity. You know, I've gotten to know the two of them a little bit. I know the management there, and I've been really good friends with some of the management there for a long, long time. But I do have a story for you, Kevin, if you will allow, that I feel like is particularly relevant to this. So I went to college to do this radio thing, which a lot of people in my life were like, don't go exclusively to do media. And I said no. And I went anyway. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was like considering radio, television, writing, the whole nine yards. And like between my sophomore, junior year, I decided this radio thing is what I am going to pursue. And I remember having a conversation with a professor of mine that I held in super high regard about making this decision. He had worked at various different markets across the nation with stops in, you know, various points of Ohio, Virginia. Cleveland was one of the areas that he worked with. And he and I are talking about this. And he said, all right, if you want to do this full time, like, what do you want to do with it? It's easy to say, I want to do radio. What do you want to do with it? And my answer was, I want to work in Washington, D.C. It's where I grew up, fan of these teams. I want to work there. He said, cool. Who do you listen to? And at the time, you know, we did not have the Always Live and Free Odyssey app. You know, even though I'm leaving, still a company guy. We did not have the Always Live and Free Odyssey app. So he asked me who I listened to. And kind of hilarious, I said, you know, SVP and Russillo. That was my favorite national show. And at that point, it was on television. But he challenged me. He's like, all right, well, if you want to work in Washington, D.C., you have to go listen to people in Washington, D.C. And because we did not have streaming services, or they weren't as good back then, it did take a little bit of elbow grease to find ways to stream the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan as I was in a different market in Lynchburg, Virginia. But I always grew up a fan of 980. I would drive to my middle school, Mercer Middle School, and it felt like every time we were in the car, it was an Al Galdi sports update when you were on the air. So we didn't get to hear you a lot, but we got to hear Al Galdi giving his updates when he was doing that in his career. But as he challenged me to listen to more Washington, D.C., you know, based sports content as I'm away, the show that happened to fit my schedule the most was Kevin and Cooley. And I feel like you understand this, but for those that don't, it's one thing to listen to radio shows. I do feel like it's very different to listen from the perspective of somebody that wants to do this. There's a lot more kind of studying and looking a little bit deeper into the way that you and Chris set up a show, how the show sounded, the segments that I liked, and things of that nature. And it quickly became my favorite show to listen to in the entire market. It was easier at the time to listen to 106.7 The Fan on my laptop, but I would always make way to listen to this show. And then I followed you in 2018 when that one guy decided you weren't going to be on radio anymore and you made the jump to the podcast. I hope he's doing well. I know you definitely are, so silly on him for that. Made the jump to the podcast. I do want to point out, because I have never told you this, I emailed you in 2018. You never responded to that email, but I ended up working with you.
Why haven't you ever told me that?
Because I thought it would be funny to save it for something like this. Oh, okay. But like to be able to work with you after listening
to that. I respond to a lot of emails, you know that.
I do know that now, yeah. But it's the basic like guy in college, hey, let's grab a beer sometime thing. And like right. You get flooded with those. So I totally understand it. And I would go back and tell that guy in 2018, wait 4 years and he'll eventually respond to you, all your emails when you send out show rundowns. But this has really been a lot of fun, man. And I know you know how I feel about you. I know how you feel about me. It did make that process very difficult to go and take this job. I will have to admit, financially, it was very easy. One of the things I love the most about this platform is honesty and transparency. And this job for me has been part-time for 3 years. And you have fought for me to get a full-time job. My direct superior has fought for me to make this position a full-time job. But there are people above all of our heads that decide budgets and things of that nature. And for whatever reason, they decided that this position was never going to be a full-time job. Didn't agree with it when I heard it. Still don't agree with it now. But that definitely played a factor in me having to look at other opportunities. Because again, like I get married in a couple of days. And you just can't be doing a part-time job getting paid not very well when you now have a legitimate family that you have to provide for. So this is my final day. I've loved it. I feel like we have elevated this show together. I remember we talked on the phone when we first decided that this was going to be the pairing. You had some things you wanted to raise the level of, and I feel like we did that over the course of 3 years. And we got to celebrate Dan Snyder selling the team. I'm glad I got to be your producer for the devil finally dying in this particular city, and then the savior coming in, Jaden Daniels. So it's been a great 3 years. I greatly appreciate it, and I'll we'll hug it out at my wedding in a couple of days.
Yeah, this was a no-brainer for you, and you're going to do great. And by the way, you just reminded me. Yeah, I mean, I think about all of these years of doing this. I don't know that there are two bigger sort of periods of time than Snyder's sale of the team and then Jaden Daniels' rookie season. And we got to do that together, and it was much easier to do it with you. I will miss you dearly. I may have to call you occasionally to get whomever is in your new role up to speed. Because I will be pointing to, well, that's not the way Denton did it. It's not the way Denton did it much differently. Can you please do it the way he did it?
The guy that's filling in for me, I don't know if I'm okay to make that announcement, but the guy that's filling in for me will do a great job. It should also be noted, I'm not like fully leaving 980. I'll still be around during football season doing the draft show when I get back from my honeymoon. So I'm still very much around. Like, I'm literally just working on another floor and different hours. I get to go back to the 4 a.m. wake-up calls. I know you're jealous of that. So I'll still be around. It's not like I'm leaving for good. It's just this show. I won't be a part of this show anymore.
D-Day, Denton Day, final day. Gonna miss him. We got a guest. We'll talk some college hoops next.
0-2-2. That foul line has been a dilemma. They made the two big ones the other night. National championship is in the balance. 13 seconds left. Florida leads it by two. Uzan gonna go. Uzan, give it up. Cryer, 6 seconds. 5 seconds. Sharp.
He walked. He can't touch it.
He can't. 1 second.
Not exactly the ending that you had hoped for, especially if you had Houston plus 1.5. I did have the under, though, and finished 14-10-2, Denton, overall in the tournament. I'll take that. Dallin Cuff has been with us before, and he joins us right now. He's with ESPN. He covers the sport, does a great job. You can follow Dallin on Twitter, at Dallin, D-A-L-E-N-C-U-F-F. He joins us now. I'm curious as to the way a lot of people described last night's game, because it was wild in so many different ways. But let's just start there. Somebody that didn't watch it, what would you say to them?
Good question, Kev. And just real quick on the betting piece, I was in Texas, so I could not place a digital wager there. I could buy an Uzi, but I can't bet. So I would have been on Houston plus 1.5, as I said on ESPN Bet Live. So I would have been right there with you. I would have said it was not the prettiest game, but ultimately Florida out Houston at the end of that game. They were tougher. They were more physical. Houston had 4 straight turnovers in the last minute and a half to close out the game. And Florida found a way, where Houston seemed to do that quite a bit this season, whether it's Kansas, the game at Kansas, you know, 2 months ago, or it's Duke, we just saw a couple of days ago. They found a way to get it done, and that's what Florida did. They didn't play their best game. Walter Clayton didn't shoot it very well. Without Will Richard in the first half, they're not even in that game.
Right.
But everybody contributed. They defended. And when they ratcheted up their intensity, it was like Houston couldn't match it, and we hadn't really seen that before. So I would tell somebody it wasn't a pretty game, but it was an impressive game. And I think ultimately, it doesn't always happen in our sport where the best team wins the championship. UConn the last 2 years did do that. But a lot of times, you go back the last 20 years, you could easily say, I don't think that was the best team. I think the best team this year won the title. And they proved it with a heck of a route to get to this point to cut down the nets.
Yeah, I mean, I think even in the first half, Dallin, like, the hellacious defense played by Houston was matched by Florida. But let me just give you what I spent some time on in the beginning, because I want your thoughts on this. I'm not a big, you know, the referees ruined the game guy. But you had two halves that were officiated so differently. In fact, I cannot remember a game, a high-profile game anyway, in which 4 fouls were called in the first half and 26 were called in the second half. And I'll give Florida credit for adjusting. Houston got in the more serious foul trouble, especially with their bigs, which forced them to go small, which I thought was a disadvantage. But have you ever seen anything like that?
No, and that was the problem. Like, and I was sitting there, and I think a lot of people that definitely people that play, but everybody that's watching the game knows these things, that as soon as there were 5 fouls on Florida in the first 3 minutes of the second half, and it was at one point, I think it was 6-1 in fouls or 7-1 in fouls.
They're going to even it up.
Within the first couple minutes, I was like, they're going to even it up. Here we go. And that's just, it's a wrap. And I think there was one possession where Houston got called 3 fouls on one possession.
12 seconds. 3 fouls in 12 seconds.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good for anybody. So it did not lend itself to a good game. That's a good officiating crew. I think did not have their best night. And once now, there were some of those were fouls. You got to call the fouls when they're fouls. It's just you didn't call them in the first half. And if that's how you're going to play it, then you got to play it that way. And when you start the second half with a different tone, you know, guys are trying to adjust. And yes, Florida's depth is important there. And the key, you know, some of the bigs for Houston getting in foul trouble is problematic. I thought they, I mean, Malik Wilson gave good minutes. I thought they could have overcome all that. But it affected their ability to offensive rebound, which was a big, big part of what they do, and defend at the highest level possible. So it changed the rhythm of the game. The guys weren't making yes. shots in the first half, but there was some, there was a rhythm to the game. It was very disjointed the second half.
100%. And, you know, like I've heard people describe, or late last night or even early this morning, describe it as a game that needed to be taken over and gotten under control. I never felt at any moment last night that the game was on the verge of getting out of control, like, you know, too much chippiness or, you know, we're about to get somebody injured. I never felt that watching it. I just thought it was hellacious defensive basketball by Houston primarily in the first half, but Florida as well. I mean, Houston had a difficult time in the half court.
Yeah, and when you said that to people, I kind of furrowed my brow that it was like you needed to keep a lid on it. I didn't feel that way at all, and I don't think the arena felt that way. I mean, obviously, the bench getting a tee, and I know the staff very well. Todd Golden was at Columbia. I met him when he got there in 2012, and Kyle Smith was there and that whole tree. So I was with them afterwards, and the after party, we were joking. I wasn't sure who got the technical. Was it Carlin Hartman or was it Jonathan Sapphire? I don't know who on the bench got the tee. But that wasn't about necessarily the players. That was the coaches. And obviously, Chinalu getting a tee in the second half, can't spike the ball. But when you see a tee handed out like two technicals because players are going at it, or there's chippiness after the play, or there's, you know, skirmishes, I didn't see or feel any of that. And so I don't think you needed to keep a lid on it. I think you let the guys play. You set the tone. Both teams are super physical. Both teams are top 10 in defense. We know that. Both teams are top 10 in offense in terms of efficiency. And you kind of know what game you're you could get, and it was playing out kind of like we thought. I mean, Houston was getting good looks early; they didn't make them. Florida was not. Like, Clayton was really struggling with how they're blitzing the ball screens, and he wanted to take shots instead of facilitate. When he was facilitating, they were better, and they were struggling to adjust to what Houston does. And I don't think the referees had to change that. To me, it seemed fine. It got out of hand when the whistle happy in the first minutes of the second half. And that's, to me, when they changed the game and changed the way they called it, not the other way around.
We're talking to Dallin Cuff from ESPN. He was there last night for Florida's national championship win over Houston in San Antonio, 65-63. Florida led for all of about a minute of the 40 last night in the game, but when it mattered the most. And you talked about, you know, at the beginning, and I agree with that description, they out-Houstoned Houston. You know, they had the best defensive sets at the end. But I would ask you, if you put any of it on the sets that Houston ran, I thought Golden was much better in the half court down the stretch than Kelvin Sampson's team was. What do you say?
I agree. And I think this is part of the challenge with Houston, though, in some of these situations. When you saw it toward the end, I'm trying to remember what game it was. I was in the studio for a game like the last week or two of this, maybe it was the Big 12 tournament, where I was just like, they're not giving any motion. They're not giving any movement. They're just trying to play a little bit of ISO ball, and that's not exactly the best way for these guys to score. And I feel like that's the way to do it down the stretch. I forget, might have been Shani Lewis said it to me after the game. Might have been Elijah Martin. They said, like, once it started for us, we feel like we got good defenders. We were locked in. We were connected, so if we needed the help, we were there. Yes, they did not have the right answers offensively. In the last play, I heard Kelvin as I was walking out of the arena because we were on the floor doing the stuff with the winners, but I heard his first presser was still going on when we were done. And I walked in to hear it, and he was trying to explain they wanted Sharp to come up there and shot fake and try to drive it and get downhill. My problem is there was 12 seconds wasted before you got it to Sharp. Like, I'm not sure what they were doing really on that last possession because, I mean, Uzan had a chance to go. Then I thought, like, okay, I see Cryer coming off this little pin down this down screen. This is first for Cryer, but then Sharp's coming up, rotating up. They just was so much time was wasted, and they just didn't get a shot off. It was indicative, to your point, of how they ended things offensively. It was just it was not playing together. It was not, you know, connected, and it didn't seem like it had a you know, a real point to their movement and what they were trying to accomplish there in those last few minutes, and particularly that last possession. And that's the joy and agony of this tournament is. It's just for 40 minutes. It's a one-and-done scenario, and there's going to be people that remember this forever with smiles and joy. And those Houston guys will remember that forever with pain, just like Tyrese Proctor remember missing that free throw for the rest of his life.
Yeah, now, along with the turnover.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
It's interesting because I actually thought that that was a better set there at the end than the previous possessions. And he just, you know, you played. He's got somebody closing out on a three. The basketball feel play is pump fake, watch Walter Clayton Jr. fly by, gather yourself with a dribble, and you got an open three to win the game, or a drive if he wants to drive it. It just was an unnatural kind of reaction. And, you know, he was pretty trigger happy much of the night. Like, he didn't take long to get it out of his hands in the first half. You know, there was not a lot of patience, and he didn't show it there on the final play either.
No, and I think that's it's really hard to do that, and it's hard to second guess it. But yes, I mean, he with that clock winding down, yeah, he should have shot fake, and he should have either got really shot fake, could have gotten into his body. I mean, it was a heck of a contest. He may have, sure, he may have made a contact if he really did that.
Yeah.
But it was, to your point, yes, that, like, that the set itself isn't bad if it's like, you know, with 2 minutes to go in the game. When it was, when you're down one with 19 seconds with a lot of wasted motion,
yeah,
that's where I was surprised by it. Not the fact that they actually had some movement. Like, relative to the other possessions, they had movement and they had guys setting screens for each other to create some angles and some space. Now, I will say, there was a hell of a closeout, hell of a contest by Clayton.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you got to make the guy make a play. And it was a great contest, and he got out there, and Sharp's, you know, Sharp just didn't make a good basketball play. And granted, it was a two possessions before. He dribbled it off his leg and
yeah,
didn't make a great basketball decision there either. I mean, he was forcing a little bit more than you'd want to see him force, for sure, and it kind of culminated in that.
All right. I know you got to run. Let me just ask you two more. Number one, what kind of pro do you think Clayton Jr. is going to be?
Well, I mean, he's a great shot maker, and he'll play better in space. I think one thing people forget, when you get to the NBA, like, you just, yeah, have so much more space. And there's just better players, more spacing, and more things to operate in. We see the shots he can make and the distance by which he can shoot it. So he'll be good in terms of the offensive side of the ball. The defensive side of the ball, he'll have to be more committed. I mean, he was the one guy at times, like, they're defensively really good, but he can kind of just kind of shut it down at times, which is a big problem. So, I mean, he'll be a good player. I'm interested to see. I mean, he went from like a second round pick to being like a top 20 pick through the tournament. I always find that fascinating. That doesn't make any sense to me when things move like that. Then if that comes to fruition, we'll see as he goes through the workouts and stuff. But I mean, the kid can really play and continue to work on his game and improve all the time.
What about Derek Queen? What kind of pro do you think he ends up being?
He could be special. He is super gifted. I mean, you guys see it all the time. Like, he is just super talented and can grab the ball off the rim and go. And I mean, there's plenty of upside, and people say, well, he's already 20. He's only 20. Okay. We're obsessed with age in the NBA. That's the 1 year different than he should be. He's a little bit older for a freshman.
Yeah.
But yeah, just uber skilled. And from everybody who talked to you around that program, his knowledge of the game and how he sees the game is what makes him really, really impressive and special. And you don't want to use the term Jokic, because that guy is literally something we've never seen before. But in that mold of a big that can put on the deck, can shoot, can pass, can have great feel, I think he'll be an outstanding pro for a decade plus. And hopefully he'll make some All-Star games and do some things at a really high level. But, I mean, the sky's really the limit for him.
Dallin, thanks. Appreciate the time.
Anytime, guys. Be well.
Yep, Dallin Cuff from ESPN. Was there last night. Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of the post game, Denton. So I have not watched it. I'm curious to go back and just see what Kelvin Sampson said. The fact that they were running it for Sharp. And you could see, like, Cryer, and then off that stagger screen and the down screen for Sharp to come up. But it actually worked. It was the best and the most organized and the most structured play they had run down the stretch. He just made a terrible mistake. And I agree with Dallin too. And we talked about this, you know, in the open to the show, that I think with Houston, you put that ball in play at 19 point, whatever it was, 19-2 or whatever, 19-7, you're down two. Your best scoring opportunities consistently have come on offensive rebounds and second chances. So going a little bit faster and getting that ball up on the rim with, say, 10, 9, 8 seconds left probably would have been a better overall strategy rather than playing for what they clearly played for, which was a last shot and a last shot three to win it. And maybe he looked at it as, I don't want to go to overtime because I'm in more foul trouble than Florida. Florida did not end up with one player with four fouls or more. You know, they had 11 fouls called against them in the game. Houston had 19. Houston, you know, lost Tugler to fouls. Francis was in foul trouble. Uzan was in foul trouble. Cryer ended up with three or four. And, you know, it was a great point that Dallin made. You know, once he saw that Florida got whistled for a bunch of fouls in the first 3 minutes of the second half, he knew that they were coming back the other way, you know, to even it up. And that's what got the foul fest started, you know, in that second half, because there were five fouls, I think, on Florida before Houston got whistled for their first. And then Houston had, here it is at the 13-minute mark. Hold on. Between 13 minutes and 47 seconds and 13 minutes and 38 seconds. So I was wrong. This is 9 seconds elapsed, three fouls on one team. That's almost impossible for it to happen. In 9 seconds, Houston got whistled for three straight fouls. That's crazy. And then it just kept coming the rest of the way. 26 fouls called in the second half, four in the first half. You know, that's one that I'll remember from last night's game. It changed the feel of the game, the rhythm of the game. It certainly changed the way Houston could guard because they were much more physical, as was Florida in the first half. And then them kind of losing bigs to foul trouble made them go small for big portions of that second half. And that was a better lineup for Florida to attack. And I give Golden a lot of credit. I mean, Clayton Jr. had 0 points in the first half. Actually, I don't think we talked about this earlier. Why they kept, you know, giving him screens, ball screens, made no sense because it was just bringing the double. You know, once they screened and brought another defender into the equation, he ended up getting doubled on all those. When they either used him off the ball or they didn't screen for him is when he started to get some looks. And, you know, they ran a couple of really good of the, you know, those high post plays that worked really well with him sort of making the pass and cutting backdoor. Anyway, good game. Could have been better. I think the referees had a lot to do with why it could have been better. But Florida was awesome. You know, they were awesome, you know, the last 3 months of the season. The last 2.5 months of the season. Really good team, well-coached team, as was Houston. I think Duke, you know, was right there in the conversation. I think we had separation between these two teams last night along with Duke. And then I think Auburn probably was, you know, with a couple of other teams next in line. I never thought Auburn was at that Duke-Houston or Florida level. But anyway, I'm trying to think. You know, there wasn't a team that should have been further along, right? There wasn't a team that we felt like totally underperformed in the tournament. Maybe Wisconsin, but they lost to BYU in a great game.
We thought it was going to be Michigan. Everybody thought Michigan was going down early.
Yeah, and they ended up winning two games, right?
Right. With no upsets, there was really no, like, massive disappointments.
Iowa State was injured coming in as a 3 seed. We knew that they were vulnerable going into it. You know, Clemson got beat in the first round. They were a 5. St. John's was, I think, a big disappointment for a lot of people. Not getting out of the second round was a big disappointment for St. John's after the regular season that they had and the Big East year that they had. That would be the one.
I had them in the Final Four, too. So you're right. That is a good one.
I think that's probably the best one. Because we lost a 2 seed in the second, you know, in the second round. But, man, that was a chalky, chalky tournament. But it provided a really, really good Final Four. I mean, 3 really excellent games, 2 incredible games on Saturday night. And last night, certainly a memorable final. For sure. Would have been much more memorable had Houston gotten a 3 off, knocked it down for a walk-off. All right, Denton, I will see you at your wedding on Friday, but this was our last show together. Denton will be moving on to much greener and richer pastures, and I'm happy for him. I'm back tomorrow. Chris is next.